Hey guys, welcome back to the How To Podcast. The How To Podcast is a lifestyle podcast on creating life you want. This week on the How To Podcast, we have Amanda from Gut Health Nutritionist on Instagram. This episode is something that I've wanted to do forever, just because as I've gotten older, I feel like my stomach has become more and more sensitive. Like every day, it honestly just gets worse. I have this conversation with so many people, and I know a lot of people experience this too. So I wanted to have someone on the podcast who could kind of help us all, you know, figure out what's going on our gut, what is good to eat, maybe things to stay away from, you know, what causes that insensitivity in our stomach. Amanda is a registered dietitian and specifically focuses on people to have this kind of gut-friendly life and being able to eat without their stomach hurting all the time. And I cannot wait to have you guys listen in. I specifically do ask Amanda. I feel like it's mostly girls who have these issues. Maybe I'm just like overthinking it, but we even talk about that too. So I can't wait for you to hear, and let's get started. All right. Hi, Amanda.
Hey.
How are you?
I am doing well.
I'm just awesome.
Relaxed, had lunch. I'm ready to go.
I love it. What was on the menu for you today?
Actually a chicken taco. And then yum. I had some watermelon that was actually really, really sweet, which can be, you know, sometimes hit or miss.
Yes, I know. We're kind of coming to the end of watermelon season, so I'm super sad about that.
Yeah, so it was good.
I love it. Well, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today. I am super excited because this topic about just like gut health and, you know, yeah. I feel like as I've gotten older, it's become more of like, I don't know if passion is the right word, but like, it's just fascinating.
Interesting
to yeah. talk about. And I feel like I know for me and a lot of my mm-hmm. friends, like as we graduated and made that transition into working full-time, we've definitely had a lot more symptoms, which I'm sure you see of people maybe with poor gut health issues and just trying yeah. to figure it all out.
Yes, definitely. There's been an increased awareness around it for sure.
Yeah. It's not so like hush hush anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, do you want to just kind of give us a little intro and about you and what you do, where you live?
Yeah. So my name is Amanda, and I'm a registered dietitian. Legit got into this field for one reason and one reason only, and that's because I absolutely love food and knew I would never get tired of talking about food. That's how I discovered. I had no idea what a registered dietitian was before, but it was in high school, you know, like going to college, trying to figure things out, you know, what to do. That's when I discovered what a dietitian was. Gut health kind of came later on. That's another thing that was like, I didn't know about it until later, quite later on. After I became a dietitian, I started getting into digestive health. You know, I had family members who had digestive issues. I had a little bit of my own digestive issues for a period of time. And just colleagues around me who were working with things, similar things. And so that's kind of how my interest in gut health came along. And even that's involved from how I started to where I am now, but it always goes back to the love of food.
Yeah, that's great. Do you, just as a question, when people say like they have poor gut health or bad digestive issues and IBS, yeah. is that kind of all under one umbrella? Is IBS only for certain symptoms? What's kind of the difference between all of that?
That's a really, really good question, because I think when you hear the word gut health, it's kind of like an umbrella term to encompass a lot of things. And usually when you hear the word gut health, it's revolved around one specific aspect of gut health, which is digestion. So IBS could fall under that gut health category, but in of itself, it's its own diagnosis that would come from a doctor. Would definitely, you know, wouldn't come from a dietitian, since I can't diagnose people. That's not my, you know, not in my scope of practice. But yes, so I would say gut health is kind of this big umbrella term. And IBS can fall under that, along with other, you know, digestive illnesses or just an interest in digestion. But I will say that gut health isn't solely digestion.
Okay, great. So that's good to know. Gut health is kind of one big umbrella term, and there's all these different things that fall under it. I always joke, I'm like, all men do is they wake up, they charge their phone, and they never have any symptoms of IBS, which a lot of guys did come after me. They said that wasn't yeah. true. But is it more common that you see that this happens like in females versus males?
That's a really good question. I would have to say, yeah, I would say it's a little bit more common to notice it with women versus men. And there is research looking at that, whether, you know, why that is. I don't think there's necessarily one specific reason. There could be many reasons why we see this. One reason could be hormonal issues that go on that are a little bit different. Personally, I think also part of it is women tend to just be more aware. I don't know, more aware or more open to talking about certain things. So there could be that aspect as well. But that's not to say that, you know, women are the only ones who experience digestive issues. It's really across the board. Anybody.
Yeah. So just
anybody.
Kind of. Yeah. Anybody. Yeah. So just kind of starting back at square one. I mean, how do you know if you might have gut health issues? I know that that's kind of a silly question, but I just remember it was like my first job right out of college. And so my first real like big girl job. And I remember there was a lot of stress that came with that job, just kind of on a whole different routine than I was used to. So a lot of changes kind of happening. And I remember I was just like having a lot of digestion issues, but I wasn't really sure. I'm like, maybe it was just something I ate this week. You know what I mean? Like, is there kind of some consistency that you can kind of start tracking of like, okay, maybe like my digestion isn't the best? Cause I also was like, I don't know if I'm just being dramatic or what the deal is.
Yeah. You almost have you second guessing yourself sometimes, like what's happening, which doesn't make you feel very good.
Right.
So kind of the thing, couple of things that you mentioned that really kind of sparked my interest, or something that if we were like in the session, I'd want to dig deeper on, would be the life change. Anytime you see life changes, that could definitely spark or bring awareness around digestive issues that may have already been present, or bring something around that was there or hasn't been there. And this in large part too is thanks to that mind-gut connection that we have. So how we feel mentally can definitely impact us physically. So you might see this with big life events, like a new job, new stressors, just new everything. Can be kind of overwhelming, and just that heightened level of stress, whether we're aware of it or not. And it's not necessarily a bad stress, right? It's kind of like an exciting stress, especially when you start a new job, you're excited, you're nervous. So it's not, I don't want to say that stress is, you know, always bad. It's just something to be aware of, because it can definitely make your digestion feel a little off, you know, those butterflies in our stomach. It might make you feel a little bit more sensitive to food. Or it could have been, hey, now I'm in a new job, I'm eating, you know, everything's a little bit different, your eating might be different, the foods you're eating might be different as well. You know, your eating pattern, that could have played a role, or maybe it was a combination of things. So I kind of went in a long way to answer your question, but it's such, when it comes to gut health, it's never just one thing in particular. Usually it's a lot of different factors that come into play.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, my guess is that stress probably plays a huge role in that.
Yeah.
So is it almost kind of like you have to conquer your stress, or else your eating's never going to be the same, you know, like what, or, you know, what are like blatant indicators, besides just like life changes that you might notice in your body? Like for me, I know it was like, I was getting a lot of acid reflux, and I just like, I was either going really consistently or not at all. And it was just like this crazy pattern. And yeah, I just remember being like, is this how it has to be forever? Or maybe I've always been like this, but never thought about it. It just like all of a sudden just started, I was messed up.
Yeah. Life changes is definitely a huge part, but one tool that I always really talk about a lot, and I think can be really helpful here to kind of identify what's normal for you, is journaling. I find journaling to be a really, really powerful tool. So doing a food and mood journal, especially in times when you don't necessarily need it, which makes it the times that you don't necessarily want to do it, because you're like, I'm fine. but doing that food and mood journal helps you kind of identify what your baseline is, and helps bring more awareness to how you're feeling. Because like what you said, was I always like this? Or, you know, is this my new normal? What is going on? So that journal helps you identify and bring awareness to like, am I going to the bathroom every day? What are my acid reflux symptoms? Does it feel like it's all the time? Or am I noticing it more after lunch, after dinner? Like, when is this happening? And we have so much things going on in our life. Our journal is going to do that remembering for us. And it's going to kind of be this neutral third party that can help shed light onto how we're feeling, into what we're experiencing. And no, it does not, you don't have to live, you know, forever like that. There is a way out. There is a way to help resolve the issues. But also, I think part of it too, you mentioned like stress, conquering the stress, I think is something you had said. Stress is always going to be there. It always will be there. So I don't know if there's ever truly like one and done, you know, I've conquered it. It's more about learning how to cope and manage and bring awareness to it.
Yeah. Do you think that for people who, I like the journaling idea, especially, you know, if it ever gets bad enough where you need to see someone, you kind of already have that food and that evidence of like, you know, when I eat a lot of like grains and whole wheat, I tend to feel this way and whatever. So I'm sure that journaling definitely helps. And then for people, you know, because truly like so much is connected to your gut. Yeah. For people who are very like one track mind and they're like not into all of like the supplements and, you know, as people call them like the woo woo parts of medicine. Like, do you, what's your response to people who are like, well, you know, your gut health is not connected to your mind. It's not a mind, body, spirit thing. It's just your gut. You know, what's the science kind of behind that?
I don't even know if I mean, there's definitely science you could go into, but the first thing I would say was, hey, do you remember in middle school when you like saw your crush walk by, or did you ever have a test that you weren't ready for and you felt those butterflies or that pit in your stomach, or like that one time I almost ran over a squirrel in my neighborhood, one of my little neighborhood squirrels, and I freaked out because I didn't want to run over my little squirrel friend, and you just feel that drop in your stomach? That's your mind gut connection. You don't ever need to like, it's not woo woo. It's something you've been experiencing from day one. And that's maybe how I would reframe it, because I feel like we've all had an experience where you feel like a pit in your stomach or butterflies in your stomach.
Yeah, no, that's a really good example. And yeah, our bodies are so connected, but yeah, I you know, work for Kodiak and we're non-GMO. And I remember someone coming up to me and they were like, you know, GMOs aren't real, and whatever people's thoughts on that or whatever. But, you know, there are some people who just truly are like, you know, if we've lived so long without anyone really talking about gut health, it's probably not that real, you know? So it's, it's just interesting to hear from, you know, the dietitian standpoint of it, of like, no, there really is so much that's connected.
And there truly is. And you can also look to fiber as well as a way to see how gut health is all connected. I remember in school, like, oh my God, this is all the things that fiber does, and how fiber helps with blood sugar control, helps with your heart health, helps with weight maintenance and your digestion. So when you think about it like that, and how fiber is critical to your gut, and how that in of itself will help other areas of your body, that could be another way to reframe it for people to show, like, you might not have been thinking about it, but this has been around.
Yeah. There, is it possible that just like, I guess we just talked about it, like life changes can really affect it, but like, do you tend to see it in people who are older, just because there's just more natural life stresses that happen? Like, you know, as people know, really,
I don't know if there's any age in particular where I see more one or the other. I would say this type of stress that seems to be more of an issue, because it's harder to pinpoint, are what I call like little sneaky stressors. You think about, you know, this past year and everything that's been going on, and how everything moved virtual and in person wasn't a thing anymore, and just compounding with all these little issues that have arisen due to the pandemic, you kind of almost get used to a certain level of like a new normal, but it's never truly, until to this day, it's not the same, right? So you get used to it, but that stress is still there. I also see this too when people tell me like, hey Amanda, it feels like my digestive, like I'm having reflux or bloating or whatever it happens to be, and it feels like it's coming out of nowhere, you know, the foods I'm eating the same, but I'm experiencing more digestive concerns, I don't know what's going on. And so then I start asking them, you know, different questions about what's going on in their life, and they start naming things, and it's interesting how it all kind of compounds. So it could be like little things that come together that don't seem big in of itself on its own, but when you start adding in all the other stuff going on in your life, it starts to add up.
Yeah, definitely. And that kind of brings me to my next point of just like not knowing like also what's normal, because for the longest time, like, yes, like after eating food, generally people tend to feel more bloated, but then once you're kind of in like this bubble and you realize something is wrong, I know I like everything is like seemed to heighten. Like, okay, I don't know if I've ever bloated this much. I don't know if this is normal or not. Yeah. I know there's a semi-normal part to bloating, but what's the actual normal? And same with going to the restroom. Like, so just to, you know, get it out of the way to talk about stool, poop, whatever, you know, how I've always been a believer that our stool really can give us such a good look at what's going on in our body. You know, what is your thoughts on that?
Oh, totally. It's like a text from your body. It has so much to say. And I'll also kind of, I know this wasn't necessarily a question, but I'll throw it in there because I think it might be helpful for people, you know, what is normal and what is like not normal. I think two ways to help identify that is like two P's, pain and persistence. You know, is this accompanied with pain? Like you said, having a little bloating after a large meal, like that's, it just, you know, is what it is. But is it really painful? Is it happening all the time? So pain and persistence can be a clue in to see what's going on. And that pain and persistence can also translate into like when you're pooping. Is there pain when you're pooping? That's not normal. Are you persistently not pooping? That's not normal. So that's another kind of clue.
Yeah. Is there a certain amount of times people should be going to the bathroom that's considered normal? Like, is it once a day, three times a day?
Ideally, it would be great if we all like went once a day, kind of like taking the trash out. But there, everyone does have a different kind of version of their normal. So it's really important to get to know what yours is. A good rule of thumb to give you an idea if you have nowhere, like no idea where to start, is the rule of three. So ideally, you don't want to go more than 3 days without pooping, and you don't want to go more than three times in one day pooping. So that kind of gives you at least a rule of thumb, an idea of what may or may not be normal. And then you can kind of tap in and feel like, oh, I feel better if I go every day. Oh, I still feel pretty good if I go every other day. That still feels good in my body. Cause you'll feel it. Like if you haven't gone for a while, like you'll definitely start to feel the effects of if you're truly constipated. But that's rule of three is a good way to kind of identify.
That's really nice. And is there also like a normal what it looks like? You know what I mean? You know, you have those really good charts on your Instagram. I think I saw like what different kinds of stool what different kinds of stool can look like. And so as best as we can, because I know we're just audio on this podcast, of like describing the different kind of common types of stool, the like color, whatever.
We can talk about that.
Let's just dig into it.
Yes. So I talk about this all the time, you know, what is normal, what is not. Ideally, the most ideal poop is going to look like a nice chocolatey brown color, nice and smooth on the surface, really easy to pass. You know, there's no pain at all. And you kind of just leaves you with a smile on your face. Like you feel satisfied and happy after. There are other poops that are not normal. So chocolatey brown, smooth on the surface is ideal. Sometimes you might notice like cracks on the surface. If there are some cracks, some cracking, a little bit's okay. But if there's a lot, it probably indicates you need to be drinking more water, adding more hydration to help with softening the poop. If your poop looks like a rabbit, then that's definitely an issue. And that is not normal. Again, that might happen every once in a while. I mean, we all get situations where we get a little constipated once in a while. Fine. But if your poop looks on the normal, like on the regular, like rabbit poop, no. You know, and I'm talking like hard little pellets. That's really painful to pass. It's not really easy to go.
And so that would be constipation?
Yes. And that would be constipation. That would be more of that constipation. And it might be a little bit constipated too, if you're noticing maybe they're not pellets, but they're small pieces and they're still hard to pass. There's like more cracking. That could be a little bit of constipation as well. And then you have the opposite end of the spectrum, which we've all also experienced at one point in our life, where it's like more diarrhea, and that there's like no form, there's no shape to it. Sometimes there are issues where there's like kind of looks, what's the word I'm looking for? Like soft serve ice cream. That's not ideal. You know, that's the kind of poop that will probably disintegrate if you flush or when you flush, not if you flush, when you flush.
If you decide to.
Right. If you decide to flush, you know, eventually it's going to disintegrate. You want it to have more of a, people can't see me with my hands right now, but you want to have it more with some more shape, more thicker consistency. So there is also that end of the spectrum as well.
Yeah, that's great. Is color an indicator?
Yeah. So color can definitely be an indicator, and there's a post that I have on Instagram that kind of dives in through some of the different colors. Black, I'll go over a couple. Like black is one you'll never really want to see, although black can sometimes happen if you were to take an iron pill, and that's pretty harmless side effect when you take an iron supplement to notice a darker colored stool, or if you had like black licorice. So sometimes food dyes, and it's more often that a food dye is probably affecting your poop. And things like, I think it was like a couple of years ago, Burger King had this special hamburger for Halloween. I don't know if you remember it. And the bun was black, and people were freaked out.
Yeah, that was
So,
weird.
yeah. So things, it's more often things like that, things that you're eating. But if you do see a black and you haven't like eaten things like that or taken a supplement, that can indicate bleeding, and it's old blood, and so it's changed colors to a darker. So usually it's black and it's kind of sticky, or what they call tarry, like it's leaving stickiness like on the bowl. That kind of thing. Explain how that. Another color you might see that could be somewhat common is red, and it's not common, but red is usually when people eat beets. Very common to see poop turning red after you've eaten beets or drink beet juice or something like that. But if you do notice some red in your stool, usually that's like fresher blood. So there could be some bleeding happening lower in the GI tract, lower in your digestive system. There's other colors like green, yellow. But yeah, good, I would refer to that little chart. It's really helpful and kind of handy to have. But ideally, you're looking for that chocolatey brown.
Nice, nice. And then one of my last questions on this poop segment is,
Yeah.
obviously we all want like the perfect poop, whatever, but in like there, basically, what's the fix for if maybe you seem to always be constipated, you always have diarrhea, or like what if it's like you never have the perfect poop, but you're just bouncing back and forth?
Alternating. Yeah. You definitely wouldn't be alone if you find yourself more constipated or more diarrhea or alternating. And that tends to be more irritable bowel syndrome symptoms.
That
Or
IBS,
you,
yeah.
yeah, that IBS. It's very common for people of IBS to be more constipation prone or diarrhea prone, or they seem to alternate between the two. So that is where working with somebody, especially if it's you're noticing it's really interrupting your daily life, if there's more pain and persistence, working with somebody one-on-one, speaking with your doctor can start to help figure out why or like what's going on and how to manage. Food intolerances are very, very common with that. But yeah, if you're noticing the changes or being more susceptible to one or the other, that would be another good indicator to seek further help.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think that also if people find food in their poop, is that bad?
Yeah, ideally, you don't want to find food in your poop. There could be situations where you might, like corn or the strings of celery. Sometimes you'll eat corn on the cob and see it a day later. And that's because there's, sometimes people tell me too, they'll have flax seeds and they'll see the flax seeds in the poop. And that has a lot to do with insoluble fiber, which we can't digest or break down. So sometimes you might see that come back out again, make its reappearance. But if you're seeing a lot of undigested food, that's not a good sign there, because for whatever reason, something isn't getting digested in your gut, and we would want to figure that out why.
Yeah. So moving on from the poop over to the bloating, just a lot of
Yeah.
really sexy topics here.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit. It's normal to like bloat after a meal, but at what point? And I guess you kind of touched on it too with the pain and persistent. Is there like basically if you can make yourself look like you're like a food baby, is that not good? Is that not healthy?
Yeah, if it feels really extended and it looks like it's real, like your stomach is really extended, that is definitely not a normal type of bloating. Especially also too, if like you wake up looking like that and you're noticing it's not even coming in around meals, like you just always seem to be, really extended. It feels like you're a balloon and they just want to pop you. Like that's not normal.
Okay, yeah, that's good to know. I mean, so with all of these things, like I feel like people want a fix, they need a fix. And for me personally, I've tried to like lighten up on the gluten or lighten up on the dairy. I know some people have gone like low FODMAP. is it possible to really, like, if you notice that you don't have great gut health, is it possible to fix these issues without having to go so extreme as to cutting out food groups? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, that first thing I would do before you ever, and it's easy to fall under, like, trying to take things out. I've done that. Like, I'm thinking, oh, I got to remove things. So I get that, but that's really not your first step. In fact, restricting more food can lead to more food intolerances. So the first step you want to do, if you suspect there might be certain foods bugging your digestion, like whether bloating or whatever it happens to be, that's where that food and mood journal comes in. Establish your baseline. Figure out what gut friendly means to you, because everyone's version of gut friendly is going to be different. So I give an example quite often about me and bell pepper. I love bell pepper. Bell pepper doesn't always love me back. And when I eat too much of it, I can get constipated. But other people are probably fine. And a lot of people are. So, like, noticing and discovering that is really important. That's where a food diary can come into play. So you do not necessarily have to start, nor should you start, like, taking things out like gluten or dairy, which are very common to do, or doing things like low FODMAP. I would really suggest that food diary and then see what's going on. See if you can identify anything from there, and then start playing around with it. Identifying maybe it is gluten, maybe it truly is gluten, but recognizing that when someone has an intolerance or a sensitivity to a food, it's not the same thing as an allergy. With sensitivities, it usually is dependent on two factors: how much and how often. Those are the things that you really want to identify. What's your threshold of how much you can have this and how often you can have it before you experience any negative side effects?
Yeah, that's great. Is it true that if you stop, like, if I stopped mm-hmm. eating gluten completely, like, I'll still have gluten every once mm-hmm. in a while, like you said, I just try to limit it. Mm-hmm. Is it true that if you cut those things out completely, like, your body will stop knowing how to digest it?
I don't know if it will ever, like, stop knowing how to digest it, but you might notice that your tolerance for it might be lower when you do decide to eat, especially would see that in regards to dairy.
Yeah.
More so with dairy because of that lactase enzyme. Doesn't your body's, like, not making that as much? So I would see it more present with dairy.
Yeah. And then something you talked about earlier that's really big is fiber. I feel like that's what you hear a lot of the times, like, mm-hmm. just eat more fiber. But from my research, and again, correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah,
it's like this, like, beautiful science, because it's like you can't have too much fiber or you can't have too little fiber, because the results are kind of the same if you have too much or too little. So what is that, like, perfect right amount, and how do you know that you're not, like, going under or going over?
So the recommendations usually hit around 25-ish grams of fiber a day. So that at least kind of gives you a guideline. And if you're doing a food and mood journal, you can kind of write these things down and look them up to even see, like, use that out, check in. Like, what am I actually getting? If I don't change anything and I eat normally, what's the amount of fiber that I'm taking in? You're right, though. Too little, too much, you can cause very similar issues. Too little fiber can lead to constipation. Too much fiber can also lead to constipation. Generally speaking, more people fall under the too little versus the too much.
Yeah. Can you think off the top of your head? I know this wasn't on, like, things you prepared for, but, like, what, uh-huh. like, what are good ways people can just incorporate more fiber into their diet, or, like, mm-hmm. what would be a good amount for a day? Just, like, thinking breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, like, what are some easy ways?
So even when I think about food, I don't think food like, oh man, I need to get some fiber. I'll lie. Sometimes I do think of that. But how I think most people think about food is not necessarily the nutrient, but what I'm eating. So focusing in on fruits and vegetables, which are going to be your major fiber foods, and also foods we tend to don't eat enough of in general. So focusing in, am I getting a vegetable with each meal, or a fruit with my snack, or a vegetable with my snack? So each time you eat, trying to hit one of a fruit or a veggie, I think just simplifies things, because you're A, going to be getting a food group you're probably not eating enough of, and B, those food groups are also high in fiber.
What fruits and vegetables are typically known for being high in fiber?
Ooh, so that's a really good question. So there's a couple of fave fiber foods
yes
that I have tongue twister
One, especially because I'm in California, avocados are like a low-key fiber food. So adding avocado to like anything, tacos, smoothies, pudding. Oh, I did a pudding once. So it's pretty good. Yeah. So I think avocado is one. Another one that I really love is berries, especially blueberries. I just love blueberries. So berries are a really great fiber food to include. And I always like having a bag of frozen blueberries or frozen berries in general, and can add it to anything or eat it by itself. That's one. Another fiber food that I really like is chia seeds. Technically not a fruit or vegetable, but chia seeds are a serious powerhouse full of fiber. What are some other ones that I really like? I would say avocado and berries are probably my top two.
Do apples have a lot of fiber?
Yeah, and they have a lot of soluble fiber.
Okay.
An apple a day, I don't know, what keeps the doctor away, but
yeah,
keeps your fiber in check. I don't know, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, apples too.
Oats. What's the difference really between soluble and insoluble fibers? Like one better than the other?
That's so funny. I literally am going to have a post on this tomorrow on Instagram.
Yay.
So soluble and insoluble fibers. So soluble fiber, you find more in like the flesh of fruits and vegetables. Insoluble, you find more of like the skin, just to kind of give you a rough idea. So with soluble fiber, this is the fiber that gets fermented by the gut bugs, by our bacteria that are living in our digestive system. Soluble fiber also forms a gel and helps to make poops nice and soft, helps us absorb nutrients for our food. Insoluble fiber does not get fermented, but it does help speed up time in our gut, which means that it helps with constipation, can help with preventing constipation. And it also kind of acts like a broom in our digestive system, kind of help keeping things clean and sweeping through the gut. So those are just kind of a rough idea of like the benefits of both soluble and insoluble.
Yeah. What another like buzzy word when I think gut health too is, you know, prebiotics and probiotics. So just starting, what is the difference between the two? And then what are examples of each two?
So prebiotics are food for gut bacteria. Probiotics are bacteria for the gut. And so there's specific strains. There's a variety of different strains that are probiotic. You can find both in different foods. So you can get probiotics and prebiotic in food. You can also find pro and prebiotics in supplements. Obviously food first is ideal. So you find probiotics in fermented foods. So anything that's been fermented will have probiotics. So things like yogurt or kimchi or sauerkraut are some examples. Prebiotics, you'll find in a variety of different foods as well, oats being one of them. Oats can have a form of prebiotic fiber. What about green beans would be another, green bananas. This is another prebiotic food. I'm blanking out for a minute, but those are some examples of pre and pro.
Yeah, I know I personally drink a lot of kombucha. Is that a probiotic?
It would be more of a probiotic. What's interesting too with probiotics is technically you need to know the strain of what's in there. And that's not always the case with some of the fermented foods. So you don't really know like how much is present in there. So kombucha is definitely fermented. I question how much is present, but I do love kombucha as well.
Yes. Oh my gosh. What's your favorite flavor?
Oh my God. So I just have this one in the fridge. That's like a coconutty kind of, I had it before. It's coconut and like lime and mint.
Okay. Nice. My favorite is, Health Aid. And then, I'll either go apple or like the pomegranate one, but oh, it's so good.
There's like is it like the Pink Lady apple one that they have? Like,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so good. I got into kombucha like in 2018 and they were just like handing out samples at the grocery store, and now I'm just like loyal customer. It's so good.
Yes, there's another one. I can't remember the brand name, but it's lavender. It's pretty good.
Oh, I've seen that flavor. I can't think of the name though, but I can like see the bottle on the shelf.
Me too. I can literally see the bottle on the shelf where I go at Sprouts, but I can't remember the name for the life of me right now.
We'll circle back on it.
Yeah.
And then what are your thoughts on supplements? I know, again, I have personally turned to them. I don't know if it's placebo or if they're actually working. I know, like I take like magnesium, I take dandelion root, fish oil. Like what are some really good supplements for people who might be experiencing gut health issues and digestion? Do those correlate? Do those work? What are your thoughts?
They can work, and they definitely have their place in you know, someone's regimen, daily regimen, or health, you know, goals. It's really hard to say, and I can't honestly say one specific thing, because it, what I think most people need to take away when they do supplements is what works for one might not work for another, and it really is dependent on your goals and your concerns. So magnesium can be helpful for some, especially a lot if you're not eating a lot of magnesium-rich foods, and or some people use it to help with going to the bathroom regularly because it helps make you poop. It can help make you poop. It can also help with blood sugar. So maybe, you know, that's another reason. Dandelion root can be helpful for some if they're looking to help with like detoxing. It's a really great detoxer. What was the other one you mentioned? Oh, fish oil. Fish oil is one I personally take because I don't like fish.
Yeah.
And I already know I don't get enough omega-3 fatty acids. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I for sure know is deficient in my diet. And so I'll take an omega-3. I also take, occasionally I'll take a probiotic. I'm not religious about it. I'm not something I take it every day, but that's another supplement that I might take. And there's different probiotics depending on the different concerns you might have. There's strains there for women's health. There's that have research for like bacterial vaginosis or UTI. There's other strains for skin.
Something that you've mentioned a few times is just like blood sugar, and like certain supplements mm-hmm. and things can help like regulate your blood sugar. What mm-hmm. part does blood sugar have to play into your role, or what role does it play like within your gut health digestion?
I think one role that blood sugar plays that we can all resonate pretty easily with is in regards to hunger. And I feel like hunger is one of our original gut feelings, right? When we're a baby, we know how to do three things: sleep, cry, and maybe two things, sleep and cry and like be awake for 2 seconds. but like oftentimes we're crying because we're hungry, right? Like that's our way. We're very in touch with hunger cues. And being aware of how hungry you are and can have many implications for your blood sugar. So oftentimes I'll see people who are either really stressed or just get really busy and forget to eat, and then find themselves eating a lot later in the day, or get really sluggish and tired in the afternoon, and their blood sugars, because if blood sugar is dropping, you haven't been eating, you'll start to notice energy changes, mood changes. You might even not feel very well as a result of these blood sugar imbalances, which can also play a role with hormones, and it's just all connected. So being aware of how hungry you are, which plays a role with your digestive hormones, right? There's different hormones involved in stimulating appetite, and being aware of that. We might feel hungry, but we can ignore it. And so being in touch with that and being aligned with that can play a role with if our blood sugar is like skyrocketing and then dropping. Like, you don't want your blood sugar to look like a roller coaster at Six Flags or something like that. You kind of want it to look like a little, you know, kiddie roller coaster, with some ups and downs, but nothing crazy. And that in of itself can also impact other hormonal, our hormonal health. So I think it's kind of like a domino effect. If you work on gut health, you'll inevitably also be working with blood sugar, also be working with hormone health. It's just so connected.
Yeah. And then one of the last things is just, I've noticed such a big difference too mm-hmm. with my gut health, with working out, taking walks during yeah. the day, not just working out during the mornings, like consistently trying to move my body throughout the day. What research mm-hmm. kind of shows, like, does that help? Is it effective?
Yeah, it can definitely be effective. Especially one thing that comes to mind is with constipation. I feel like we talk a lot about fiber when it comes to constipation, but one of the unsung heroes is movement. Movement can really help, whether it's just, like you said, like walking, just purposely and intentionally trying to move your body throughout the day, because we are so sedentary. That can really, really help, especially in regards to constipation.
Yeah. Is there a correlation there for whenever you take a vacation or you're on a trip and you're like sitting on an airplane for a long time? Because I feel like a lot of people are like,
and it changes your pooping schedule.
Yeah. And a lot of people are like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm fine. And then I go on vacation, I'm bloated, I don't have a regular yeah. schedule. It's just terrible.
I think it could be partly due to that, you know, the not moving. It's also just your gut doesn't like change, and vacation is all change, right? Your routine is completely different.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's most of my questions for you. You're so knowledgeable. You knocked it out. My favorite, I love your Instagram. I'm on it right now, even just scrolling through. And yeah. I feel like you have so many good graphics that describe like a lot of what we talked about today of just fiber and poop and having a good gut health and prebiotics, probiotics, blood sugar, whatever. So where can people, because I'm like trying to like, oh, I wish I could just like show this on the mental screen, right? But yeah, where can people find you if they, you know, want to follow you? And you give out great advice. Like you said, you're always posting about different things for your gut. So where can they find you?
Yeah, the best, easiest place to find me is probably Instagram. And my handle is @guthealth.nutritionist. There's also a free food and mood journal template that I have. So you can sign up to get that to kind of get you started. Like, what do I record? How do I record? How do I figure these things out? That's also there. And I'd suggest downloading that to kind of get you started on your gut health journey.
That sounds great. Well, awesome. We will definitely follow you on there. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. This was awesome.
Thank you, Lily.
Yes, we'll talk to you soon. Bye. Hey, it's Lily. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of the How To Podcast, a lifestyle podcast on creating life you want. Keep up with all things The How To on Instagram @thehowtopod and follow, subscribe, rate, comment, like anywhere you get your podcasts. See you next time.